Once more unto the breach, dear friends. Else close the wall up with our English dead. Good morning again, ladies and gentlemen, boy and girl, hopefully. On the line with me, I have Jeff McClure, hopefully. This is Jake McClure. This is the personal wealth coach. Jeffrey McClure, are you there?
I think I'm here. All right. I might not be, but I think I am.
All right. Your timing of your phone call is right as I'm pushing buttons. It's like juggling. And at no point did my hands leave my wrists.
Well, I'll hit you with another one while you're at it.
No. All right, here we go. I got to put a...
There it is.
Mute it quick.
I can see you right here. Good. Excellent.
Yeah, you need to mute your microphone there or you're going to get some weird echoes. So what's going on here is that we have... hold on just a second. I've got to turn this microphone. You've got to...
Mine's muted.
Now it is. Maybe.
No, it was. It says it's muted.
Okay. So, here we are. This is the Personal Wealth Coach. We are sitting here. I'm in Temple. You're in Salado. Or vice versa, depending on whose perspective it is.
Wonders of modern technology.
Right. Due to plague and dumpster fire, the entirety of 2020 will be held in reserve for future reference in giving curses to people, I think.
May you live to see another 2020.
Oh, that's a rough one. Don't wish that on anybody at this point.
Well, we need to do our disclosures and disclaimers.
Yes, let's do it.
Versa Wealth Coach is not only a riveting, interesting, and challenging radio program broadcast on Saturday mornings over the internet and KTEM. It's also the name of an SEC registered investment advisory firm in Salado, Texas, which does not imply, by the way, that the SEC approves or disapproves of our actions. They're just our regulators. Also indicates that we are, and I put a quote in front of this, large, end quote, investment advisor, as opposed to a, quote, small, end quote, investment advisor. Let's see. What else do I need to say? We do not pay for this radio program, nor does KTEM pay us for this radio program. We do advertise on KTEM for the radio program. If you can make sense out of that, you're welcome to discuss it. It's a long discussion, deeply philosophical.
Yes.
The information we present on this program is intended to be educational. It's not investment advice, despite the fact that we operate and work at an investment advisory firm in Salado, Texas. We give educational information on this program. Investment advice is given individuals based on their specific situations, desires, et cetera, et cetera. The information we present is also obtained from sources we deem to be reliable, but we make no warranty or guarantee as to the completeness or accuracy of said information. Don't you love that?
No, I don't. I think it's a silly disclosure. I don't like that one at all.
Yeah, but we need to do it.
No, we don't. We can change that. We can say we deem these sources to be reliable, but we're not guaranteeing anything. You always use the warranty or guarantee like they're not the same thing.
They are different under the law.
A warranty and a guarantee are different. You're right. One is saying that...
one begins with a W and another one begins with a G.
Exactly. That is the major difference under the law.
Any first grader will be able to tell you this.
So we're done. Redundant and repetitive at the same time.
That's right. We're redundant all over again.
Yes. So I love it as much as redundant repetitiveness. But that's... Go ahead.
You named it. You hit it on the head. That's us. Redundantly repetitive.
Yes. Proudly so.
We proudly send out the same official disclosures required by the regulators on a regular basis to clients.
Yes.
Over and over again.
As much as we can.
Yes.
Because...
Well, you know, we're doing something good there because we're enabling the Postal Service to stay in business. Because we send them first-class mail. We don't send them junk mail.
Yeah, except is first class so first class anymore? I mean, if you're on an airplane and you say this is first class, it's a little different than when you go to the post office and say, I want this scent.
It used to be not much different, but it is different now. There are places in the United States where it is taking up to 30 days to get a delivery of a non-first class letter.
Yep.
And that's too bad, but it's happening. What happens is people in the postal service, let's say in Philadelphia, are exposed to coronavirus because one person in the entire crew that's handling the mail was tested positive. So the entire shift then has to go home for 14 days and self-isolate. And that really puts a strain because the Postmaster General has forbidden the post office to pay overtime or to hire temps.
Yeah.
So that probably really puts a strain on the mail delivery, particularly in the larger northeastern cities. Well, I don't think we've seen a lot of that happen here, but
not much.
I can imagine if in the Salado post office somebody tested positive for coronavirus, and they would have to shut down the entire post office.
Oh, they might. They might just pull some people from Gerald. I think here we're better at juggling than they are in the Northeast, because that's just my opinion. I think we're better at business in general down here, but
I think we are too.
That's very egocentric.
It's sort of geocentric. I think Texas is a good place.
I do too. I think.
Yeah, no. Hope it stays that way.
As rough it is to watch the large amount of pushback against wearing masks, not seeing as much of it now in Texas as we used to. I think enough people have gotten sick now that somebody knows somebody, or at least knows somebody that knows somebody that's been sick with this already. So the hoax concept is starting to disappear, because it's really hard to be claiming it's a hoax when you're in the hospital.
Yeah. Well, we better talk about the market.
Yes, let's do it.
The S&P 500 Stock Index, SPX. And why do I say SPX? Because there's lots of measurements of the S&P 500 Stock Index, believe it or not. And SPX, if you actually type in SPX, you'll see the one we're referring to, the pure one. It forged ahead this week 0.64%, which doesn't sound like much until you multiply that times 52 and you get an astonishingly large number. Closed Friday at 3372.85. That new rise leaves it up 4.4% from the beginning of the year.
Yay!
And it's only 0.39% below its high point in February. Now, normally, a 4.4% rise at this point in the year would mean we were going to have about a 6% rise for the year, and we would think that was pretty anemic from the S&P 500. At this point, considering that we're in a severe economic slump, and we had the largest quarter of downturn since they've been measuring GDP in the second quarter, that's pretty astonishing, and it's really mind-boggling. The problem is the S&P 500 for 1 year is ahead 16.8%, which is astonishing. 16.8% rise in 1 year historically has come at times when the economy is booming and running almost out of control. Be a time when you would expect the Fed to be raising interest rates and there'd be some concern that the market was getting ahead of itself, but people are still investing vigorously. And they're doing so in the middle of one of the biggest downturn since we've been measuring downturns. Probably was worse in the early 1930s, the downturn, but we weren't measuring it very accurately. The S&P 500, the market in general, remains severely divided, though. That growth that we've seen is being driven by 10 large capitalization growth stocks.
Yeah.
Now, what's that? That's really
big companies
in their value on the market that are oriented on growth. They're not oriented on value. What's oriented on growth mean? It means that the people who are buying them are making a bet that the stock will continue to go up because its earnings will continue to go up, which is a little strange. For Amazon example, which is right around 141 times earnings. In other words, if Amazon's earnings and expenses stayed the same and you bought the stock today, it would take 141 years for the profits of the company to pay for the stock.
I think it's like 121 after the earnings released for this quarter.
So 121. And the rest of the market, other than those 10, the vast majority of it is still down about 11% year to date, which is rational, about where we'd expect the market to normally be. these divisions between growth and value, the value side of the market being down about 11%, the growth side up tremendously. When they've occurred in the past, and there's no guarantee that the past is the future, but when they've occurred in the past, there has been a reckoning at some point for the growth stocks plunged back down to earth.
As the growth stocks drop. Yeah.
That's reflected because Goldman Sachs is a bull. It's forecasting an ongoing bull market and rosy days ahead. Happy days are here again. All the other major investment banks are saying, nope, we're going to have a big correction before the bull cranks up again. And you can make your own decisions. But if you got a well-diversified portfolio, there's a couple of things we should warn you about. One is don't jump on the growth spurt. I've seen that happen too many times. By the time you finally jump on the growth spurt, that means it's probably almost over and we'll plunge back to earth. So it's really important to be cautious. And the other thing is to be prepared for the fact that there's a high probability that we will have a major correction sometime between now and the time the vaccine is, maybe when the vaccine comes out and it appears that the economy is returning to its pre-pandemic normal, because the companies that are up the most are the ones that have benefited the most from the pandemic.
Right. And the key point here is that those big companies that are leading the charge, people are assuming that they're going to have the kind of growth rate and earnings that they've had because of the pandemic. That implies that the pandemic's forever. And as much as it feels that way, man, I feel that way right now. This has been going on forever. It's not real. We're just here right now. We're wrapped in the emotions of this moment. So people look around and they say, what's still profitable? And they buy those things. Well, those things are now so grossly overpriced, they would have to have worsening pandemic conditions that gave them those extra earnings going on indefinitely into the future to bring their price down, or their earnings and relationship to the price down to a healthy relationship. So before we move much further beyond this point, what is a price to earnings ratio? Do you want to answer that? We use it a lot.
Well, if you think of it as a rental purchase, if you're buying a rental house and you bought it for $100,000. If your free cash flow, your profits after paying the taxes and accounting for depreciation and doing the repairs you needed to go, was $10,000 a year, you'd have a $10,000 earnings on your $100,000 investment. That's 10%. And your price to earnings ratio would be 10.
Right. And that's a very earnings, very nice, healthy relationship there in price to earnings.
And if you were only making a $5,000 profit in this environment, that might not be bad at all, because you've got a 5% profit on your investment and your price earnings ratio is 20. The problem with stocks that when they get up above 20 is that they don't stay there very long, because the long-term growth of the stock market, even adjusting for inflation, even putting inflation into it, is around 7% a year.
Right, and let's give an example.
Historically, that's not right. In the future.
Let's give an example. A company that both of us like a lot. We use their services. We certainly don't recommend buying them, and you'll hear that even more as we explain it. Amazon. It's a fantastic company. I buy a ton of stuff from them. If they deliver during the pandemic, it's actually gotten better, not worse. But if you look at what they're doing, if they continue to grow their market share at the rate that they're doing, and this is kind of what's assumed in their price right now. If you do some little bits of math here, it's not even that difficult. If you look at what kind of earnings increase that they've had and what their market share is of the United States right now. First, we got to lay out some things. They had really big targets set on the marketplace of China over the last decade. And that's been basically thrown out the window at this point. Amazon is not going to make it in China, just like its replacement in China is not going to make it in the United States. There's too much political effort against it. So that means that Amazon is already in almost every place it can be on the planet to increase its market share. There's no more people Now, it might get some more, but now you're digging into places that have lower margins, lower profit area. The lower the economic potential of a country, the lower the profit. So they would have to keep increasing their existing customer sales. So if you think, you know, before pandemic, how much did I buy from Amazon? Well, I bought a pretty large amount from Amazon, and that increased a bit during the pandemic, and it increased for a lot of people. But it's just not convenient or reasonable to buy everything from Amazon. And that's what the price is kind of pricing into the stock, that at some point everyone will only buy from Amazon. And that's not reasonable. It's just when you see that kind of a growth rate in a stock price that is exponentially greater than the earnings increase, it's because there's just not a lot of very profitable places right there, and people are buying with this. There's two ways of buying. One, you say, hey, what's a profitable company? I'll go buy that. The other one is, what are profitable companies that are inexpensive? I'll go buy that. That tends to work better than find a profitable company that's really overpriced. Just as a side note.
Historically, it's worked better.
Yeah, historically, if somebody's about to buy an optical store, they say, I've always, you know, I'm retiring and I've always wanted to sell eyeglasses. If there's two stores that are profitable and one of them is more expensive than the other in any way you measure it based on profitability or anything else, then the other one is probably the better deal. Just, you know, lower prices tend to be better when you're opening a business.
There's a way of saying this that I like.
Yeah, it's a pretty common way of saying it, I think. Go ahead and try it.
The vast majority of the market is on sale, and 10 stocks are priced higher than they've ever been priced before, and you're going to go buy some. If they were selling at Best Buy or Walmart or something, and you saw all these stocks, and if you were the person who bought the ones that were the most expensive just because they're high priced and because their price keeps going up. Now, you intend to sell it in the future when you've used it a little bit. Would you go and buy, if there's a really quality something, anything at a low price, and there's an equal quality something at a very high price, you probably would instantly buy the low price.
Unless, and this is the behavior stepping in. Unless it's a big name brand and you're doing it to impress people. If you want to buy Nike shoes, are they more expensive than a brand you've never heard of on Amazon? Well, yeah, a lot more expensive. You might be able to, you know, a new pair of Nike shoes might be $150. And you could get the same, in essence, quality without the swoosh logo for $30. Now, if you go back to someone and you try to sell your used shoes, first off, there's not a market for used shoes that nobody knows the name brand of. Nike's got a market.
For used shoes?
Not for used, but for pre-owned.
Oh, pre-owned. Oh, I got
not you. Used, but pre-owned. So that's part of the price on Nike, is that they're collector's items. The thing is, if you do wear them, you're showing off the symbol, and everybody knows that's a prestige item. So if Kia has a beautiful, Kia the car, has a beautiful luxury automobile for $40,000, and you can buy, in essence, the same quality from BMW for $70,000, well, people that have that amount of money are generally more likely to buy the BMW because they have a prestige associated with them. And you drive a Kia and people are like, isn't that an economy car? What are you doing in a luxury economy car? So prestige is part of what's driving the market right now. Prestige and short-sightedness. People are looking at this as these are recognizable names. I've got article after article after article about fractional share purchases being a big volume in the market right now. Have you been watching that?
Oh, yeah.
6,150% surge in one and in delisted companies because they're penny stocks and people are bored. So 6,150% uptick in a delisted loan, a delisted note. It's an exchange traded note that started up, and when it started up, it kind of hit all of the blog boards and all of the little chat rooms, and everybody jumped in, and that had been delisted by the company that issued it already, but it was still being traded on the open market. So stuff like that going on, it went from $125 per share on Thursday morning to $15,000 a share on Friday.
And people were buying it because it was going up.
Right. Not because of what it was, but because of its track record for the day. And they wanted to get on board with that. That is irrational and exuberant. Let's put those two words together, shall we?
And when we've seen that in the past, and we have seen it in the past, we saw it big time in the late 1990s going into 2000. It has always ended in a crash. Now, that doesn't mean that it's going to end in a crash this time. I mean,
the past it never means that. Right.
Past performance is no guarantee of future returns, either good or bad.
It's a nice indicator.
Since we've studied the markets, as long as the markets reports, and we go all the way back to 1720, there's a classic market stock craze that occurred in 1720 called the South Sea Company bubble.
Yeah.
And it kept going up longer than anyone thought was possible for it to go up. Market stocks were sold that were absolutely worthless and announced to be worthless, and people would buy them because it was an IPO, it was a new offering. It's going on right now. There are companies that have announced that they're going to be filing for bankruptcy that suddenly had their stock price jump into the stratosphere. And one of them actually said, we want to do a new stock offering at this point, despite the fact we're about to file for bankruptcy, because people want to buy our stock so badly and we can get a lot of money. Fortunately, the SEC said, no, you can't do that to the company, but people would have bought the stock. They would have bought the stock and given money to the company. And eventually, of course, the stock crashed back down to near zero, which is where it belonged to begin with. This is going on underneath the surface, and it's going on to a lesser degree in the large, high-growth companies. That's why their price-to-earnings ratios are so absurd right now.
Now, right at the middle of all of this, gold is also leaping into the stratosphere. And you've got people out there that are preaching that the stock market is too high, so buy gold as a hedge. And you've got the same issue. They're buying gold because it's going up right now, but also because of this concept. And let me say, this is a concept that's been not thoroughly respected by history, that gold is a nice hedge against stocks. Because if you look at the crash in the market after pandemic news really seriously got taken into the United States, gold crashed at the same time the market did. It recovered faster, but it crashed. And if we look back through time and we see when has the market crashed and gold didn't, there's just a very, very few times that that's happened. And so it's not consistent. It isn't a good hedge. It is a commodity. And the important factor here, and man, this is important. The number one purchaser of gold in the world by country was India for the last 3 years. And India is experiencing a surge in coronavirus that makes ours look paltry. We're no longer the number one in the world for daily cases. India passed us up about 2 weeks ago and has shown no signs of slowing down that growth rate. They are going to be the largest infected number in the world before incredibly long. Last week, I made the prediction by the end of September. It may be thoroughly sooner than that. They are moving at a rate. And what happens when the economy of India hits? If we look at the economy of India and the price of gold, what you find is that gold prices drop when the economy of India is hit because they've got more gold to sell and they sell it when they need money. So gold is not the hedge it used to be. And it was only that hedge when it was a fixed price based on the Bretton Woods Agreement across Europe and the United States that said they would fix the price of gold. Well, if it's fixed by the government, of course it's a steady and nice reserve position, because it doesn't fluctuate. It's fixed. But it hasn't been fixed since Nixon unfixed it. So that's where we are. If you're buying something because it's going up right now, that's generally a bad reason to buy things. You should be buying something for another reason, and if it's going up, that should be just extra information. You should be buying it based on its price. You should be buying it based on your expectation for its future. You should be doing some research into this, not buying things that are going up. And unfortunately, most investors don't do it that way. And if you've ever done the task of picking a mutual fund in your 401k, most of you know what I'm talking about. You look at the list on the 401k and you look over at the returns and you go, oh, this one's been really, really good. I'm going to get that one. This one's been really, really good. I'm going to get that one too. Because it's all the information you're really given in many cases when you're making the decision. What's the return? If you're buying something because it's got a higher return than something else, you probably should know why that is. Is it because of the area of the market it's in, or is it because of good management? What are the reasons? And that's hard, and a lot of people don't have time for that. I would say if you're putting a significant amount of your wealth in it, you do have time for it. Make the time for it. I mean, if you're doing a garage sale, you make the time to price all of the items that you're going to sell, even if it's completely arbitrary. Think of the number of hours there and do that amount of research for your 401k, and you're going to benefit from it. You'll learn more at the very least. Yes. So that was kind of a side note.
Well, basically gold goes up when interest rates go down. And since interest rates are so astonishingly low, people are buying gold thinking it's better because it's going up. And the problem is gold is far more liquid than it used to be. The ETF, there's an ETF that actually has, you're actually buying gold when you buy the ETF, presuming that they store the gold as they say they're going to store the gold. And apparently they are. The ETF is now the largest holder of gold in the world, has more gold than the Federal Reserve does, which is pretty astonishing. But the problem is it's very liquid. The ETF is very liquid at the moment, which means that when people decide to sell, which eventually they will do, it will collapse. The price will collapse of gold, and it will collapse very abruptly, very suddenly. We had a dip the other day during the week. We had one dip where it dipped suddenly rather dramatically and then came back up again. The problem with buying gold through that ETF is the very liquidity that allows you to do it. It can be sold very easily, and by the way, ETFs are a little untested in this. It can lock up if there's no place to sell the gold. In other words, if everybody wants to sell and nobody wants to buy, you can get in a lot of trouble with gold right now.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, if you calculate inflation, I don't know how accurate the news report is I just read, but it said that if you calculate inflation, gold right now has still lost 48% when compared to with its high of $875 an ounce back in 1980.
Yeah.
Gold over the long term has lost money. The gold value 100 years ago or 200 years ago was dramatically higher than it is today after you adjust for inflation. And this is a time when people are buying stocks and they're buying gold for the same reason, because they believe the pandemic. Basically, if you're buying stocks or buying large cap growth stocks right now, or you're buying gold, you're assuming that the pandemic will continue forever. The people who are on the other side of that argument, who are buying things that are undervalued right now because of the pandemic, in other words, they're buying companies that where the price has dropped dramatically, but the company is still healthy, are saying, no, this pandemic will be over with in about a year, and people will return more or less to their normal behavior, and they'll start shopping again.
Right.
They'll start buying cars again. They'll start doing the things that they normally do again. So there's basically two bets going on here. People don't think about it that way, but that's the way it works. One is that this will go on forever. This is the new normal. People will continue to stay in their houses and buy everything from Amazon. The other side of the argument is, no, that's not going to happen. People are going to want to go out to eat, and they're going to want to go to Best Buy and look at the stuff they're buying, and they're going to want to go to Walmart and look at the things they're buying. So when you make a decision to purchase either high growth or gold at this point, you're making a bet one way or the other on the economy, and I think most people who do it are not realizing that that's true.
In the middle of this, and this isn't something that we've covered very much, municipal defaults are at the highest level they've been since the end of the Great Recession. That shouldn't be a big shock, except that this is just the beginning. What do I mean by just the beginning? When I say at the end of the Great Recession, I really mean 2011, which is really hard to gauge that in the 2008-2009 recession. How is that the end of the recession? Well, the recession affected property values, and property taxes are gauged on property values. And that is a massive delay, because you pay your property taxes a year after it's been valuated. Then the budget for the municipality is based on that new revenue. If it's not enough and they don't cut the budget, it's the end of the following year that they usually default. So 2011 was the year of defaults in municipals. What is a municipal? It's a city or a state, a highway construction that's mandated by a government that is in some way getting money borrowed to do something, whether that's build a stadium, a highway, some kind of complex, pay for their policing, whatever it is, they get usually a lower rate, although for along the last decade, they haven't gotten much of a lower rate. And generally, you get some tax exemption for federal income taxes, usually inside the state that you live into. So in Texas, it doesn't matter, but a lot of states will exempt their municipalities in that state from state income taxes as well. So you got these benefits going on in these municipalities, but we're seeing the level of default, which means they're not able to pay the debt, rivaling the peak of the recession, and we're still early on. And the reason is because when the pandemic really started hitting, we're still in the late payment for a lot of the property taxes, and sales taxes have been abysmal. So you're getting these municipal failures, and I mentioned highways. Well, what does that mean? That's a toll road usually, and you can take a guess if you'd like as to the toll road revenue when the nation was in lockdown. To say it dropped is the same as saying everything dropped. It's an understatement, but it's one that we all understand. So a lot of municipalities are starting to default now, and that hasn't caused their interest rates to go up. Interest rates in the municipal market have dropped with the rest of the market. There's weirdness going on there and in gold and in these really highfalutin tech stocks. The weirdness in municipalities, most of, and there's a lot of new issuances of debt in municipalities right now, just like refinances on mortgages. The interest rates are lower. So municipalities are refinancing their debt at a lower rate while we're at a tiebreaker for the Great Recession's defaults. Why is that weird? Well, because if your debt credit is not great, if your credit history is not great, if you're buying or you're getting a credit card, expect you to yourself to pay higher interest rates. If you're having trouble paying your debts, expect your interest rates if you go for a new loan to go up. We're not seeing that in the municipal market because people still associate municipals completely, in many cases, with being safe. They're as safe as they are and no safer. They are low interest, not because they're ultra safe, but because there's a lot of people wanting to place money where they think it's traditionally been safe.
Incidentally, that's part of the debate on the stimulus package in Congress. The Democrats want to give money to municipalities because a lot of municipalities are facing potential bankruptcy.
And that could be part of why the market's acting the way that it is.
And the Republicans don't want to give money to municipalities. Well, actually, a large number of Republican senators don't want to give money to anybody.
Yeah, there are Republicans that want to give them to municipalities, too. This isn't a cut-and-dried all-Republicans thing, but there is a group of about 20 senators that are Republican that don't want any stimulus package right now.
And so you've got a lot of forces going on in the market that are driving things out of equilibrium. One of the things, by the way, that's driving gold up, I just read, is Turkey.
Turkey? Turkey.
Because country of Turkey.
Oh, country of Turkey. That's less exciting.
Terrible.
I was thinking turkeys were doing it. They're in
terrible financial condition, and it's going downhill pretty fast. And there is a great deal of worry among very wealthy people in Turkey that their currency will collapse and their banks will collapse because they've done it before. So they're buying gold to hedge against the fall of the Turkish lira. And it has fallen dramatically. And this is going on in several countries around the world, including Russia, including India. So they're starting to buy gold to offset the potential for their country to go bankrupt. And that's just the reality of what's going on. Once it goes bankrupt, by the way, they'll start selling the gold.
Yeah. And that means that you've got to time that. If you're going to do that, you better be on your game. There are people that make profit in gold regardless of the price of gold.
Wait, we got to do commercials.
Yeah, we're going to do that. Let me say this real quick. If your job is jewelry, you generally can make a profit on gold regardless of its price because people are buying art from you. And that's the thing is that professionals are not the same as dalliers in most people that collect gold. I would say that's a hobby. A lot of people say it's investment. I'm like, yeah, but probably not. You're not doing anything to the gold to make it better. You're just holding it. We do have commercials to play. Thank you for reminding me. That was very nice. We'll be back on the other side. If you would like to join the conversation, and we've got an opinion out there right now that we'll hit as soon as we come back in, and it's on LIBOR, which is one of the subjects that I wanted to talk about. If you don't know what LIBOR is, prepare to be bored. No, we'll try to make it exciting. It's the London Interbank Offer Rate, which is a number that's used for a lot of things. But we got to play some commercials. We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you want to send in the emails, it's jake@tpwc.com or jeff@tpwc.com. And we'll be back on the other side. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jake and
Jeff
McClure. We did
it.
Did
we do it?
No, sort of. You said your name and I said mine. It's amazing. We can still do that occasionally.
After 70 years of practice, I'm finally able to do it.
Yes. And I'm looking at his face through the video camera now.
Because I was too dumb to turn the video camera on earlier, so he couldn't see me.
It's blind. Dumb is about inability to speak. I could hear you just fine.
Mm.
I was too blind to see you without the video camera turned
on. So I'd be dumb if I turned the microphone off.
Yeah, in the technical sense, yes.
Oh, yeah.
And if anyone knows anything about us, we're quite technical.
Yes. Sometimes. Sometimes we're technophobes.
Right. We have a question. There's a picture of a Wall Street Journal article, the paper version. So we now have a digital paper version of the Wall Street Journal emailed to us. How's that for weird?
Cool.
And this isn't the only week it happened. Every week for the last several weeks, we have been getting the digital paper version. Not the digital version, not the paper version, the digital paper version. So the headline is LIBOR Troubles Deepen as End nears for the rate. You guys probably don't remember this, but some of you will. Back in 2012, there was this big scandal in Europe where people were fixing interest rates on this kind of back behind the scenes interest rate, and people were very upset about it in politics and in finance, but most people were like, I don't even know what they're talking about. The London Interbank offer rate, LIBOR, is the international standard to set your loan rates against. And when I say your, I actually mean you, your loan rates. You, if you're listening to this, mortgages are influenced by this. This is a lot more than the Federal Reserve's influence on mortgage rates. It's a lot more than the Federal Reserve's influence on business rates for loans. There's a lot, just putting it lightly, there's about 200 trillion with a T, not a B or an M, dollars that are linked in some way to the interest rate of the LIBOR. You can understand why this might be a scandal if people were fixing that rate. That's $200 trillion worth of things that are derived from it. Those are called derivatives. It's about $190 trillion. The actual LIBOR is, what does that mean? London Interbank Offer Rate. It's the interest rates that the banks charge each other in the UK. So if you're getting a loan overnight, kind of like the Federal Reserve's interest rate that it moves up and down, this is what the LIBOR represents for the UK. Everything makes sense so far?
Yes, to me.
Okay. So there is, the question was, what's going to replace it? We decided back in 2012, the world in general, that we needed to put less of a focus on the LIBOR. So the Federal Reserve regulators said, all right, for the United States, we need to come up with a similar rate that that we will use. And Fannie and Freddie, the two big mortgage giants out there that are in essence government run at the moment and government owned at the moment, though they are also owned by the public, have said that they're going to use something called SOFR, which is a lot harder to say than LIBOR. It's the SOFR. It's just not a good acronym. We got acronym issues already. It's the Secured Overnight Financing Rate. It is almost identical to the LIBOR, only in the United States instead of the UK. Anybody that was with us over the before pandemic, before dumpster fire, when we were talking about things, and in September, we had a massive jump in the SOFR. Massive jump in the interest rate. It went up from about 2% roughly to above 5% overnight. One night differential. Boom, you're up there. What happened? Well, there wasn't enough money to go around, and the big banks weren't putting the money in that offer area. They weren't loaning to each other because they had some restrictions that the Federal Reserve had put on them. Well, now the Federal Reserve is loaning in that area. They've dumped a lot of money into that area, and they're basically treating it like another Federal Reserve interest rate at this point. They haven't had to really juice it much lately because so many other people are throwing money into loans right now. I mean, everybody's got money in cash. That cash is being used by the bank that's holding it to make loans. That's how banks make money. So there's a record amount of cash in the system, and that rate looks good right now. Before the pandemic, it looked good as well, but the Federal Reserve was a big contributor to that. So it's already, the question's already been answered in that we know it's going to be SOFR that replaces the LIBOR. But the Ameribor is the American Financial Exchange version of similar things. There's lots of other rates out there. So what you should expect to see is a less common rate used on most loans. It's basically a decentralization of interest rates. It's not going to be based on one interest rate set in Europe. It's going to be based on whatever the purchasing bank, the one that purchases the mortgage from the one that gives it to you, determines is the interest rate that needs to be followed. If you're in the middle of a refinance right now, and a lot of people are, because interest rates are low, you probably just heard the big news that Fannie and Freddie both announced that they're going to charge a 0.5% fee for risk. The Trump administration has come out and said, hey, what's going on there? It's supposed to start being charged on September 1st. So if you're in the middle of your refinance and you can get it closed before then, it will save you 0.5% of the price that you're getting refinanced. So if you're getting $200,000 refinanced, it will save you $1,000. $400,000, $2,000 that could be saved if you are getting refinanced right now. So there's going to be even more pressure on the banks to get that done sooner. Lots of banks are protesting. The Trump administration is protesting. There's nobody that's really for this because it's a kind of an unknown fee. It's never been charged before. They're saying it's an emergency fee. So this is all kinds of weird news with interest rates right now. Municipal interest rates haven't gone up with defaults. There's a new fee being placed on interest rates for mortgages if they're being bought by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and about 90% of mortgages are. So I probably answered that question with a shotgun, but one of the pellets was the right answer, and it was the early one. Interest rates are weird right now. The markets are weird right now. Know that. Don't expect it to act normally for the next who knows how long. Do you have another subject to talk about?
Oh, yeah, I got lots more subjects to talk about. I mean, it's important that we note, by the way, that retail sales were up 1.2% compared with a year ago.
Right. But if and you...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, but if you own a brick-and-mortar establishment, you still haven't recovered from a year ago. Sales for online purchases are up 24% year over year. So retail sales are up, but that doesn't mean that your local store is actually up. It may actually be the other way around. But overall, there are more purchases happening by, what is it, 1.7% up over what it was last year at this point for July?
Yeah.
So that's good news in that money's moving around the economy. It's bad news for local economies.
Well, it's a strange number, too, because another supposedly good news piece of news that came out, and we need to talk about both of these more, is the fact that the new unemployment claims last week, were only 1 million, around just below 1 million.
Yeah, dropped below 1 million.
Which is pretty amazing, any way you look at it. I mean, if you look at it from the fact that normally new unemployment claims in a reasonably healthy economy run about 200,000 a week, the fact that they've jumped to 1 million,
that would be terrifying in a normal situation.
And yet they did it anyway. And it caused people to be very optimistic that we only have 1 million people newly laid off each week. And that caused the stock market to go up.
Yeah, which is good news. It's less bad news is good news.
It's weird.
Yeah, it is weird. Yeah. So,
by the way, if I suddenly disappeared, it's because I had to reboot my computer.
Okay. Is that what's going on? I'm hearing some pauses and so on. Okay. I'm picking up my... We're about out of time for this hour. We're getting close to the end.
We need to talk about the industrial production went up. It's still down dramatically from where it was a year ago, but it actually rose despite the fact that sales are falling. And there's a lot more about the economy to look at right now.
Yeah, I want to talk about capacity utilization. There's some really good things to talk about there.
There's a tremendous room for growth in our economy, but it also strongly recommend that we realize that the economy is still down dramatically from where it was at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something we're not seeing in the market. And as you go back to work, it's not something that people are overly aware of. I mean, you're overly aware of it, but you're much more aware of the fact that you've got a mask on your face or you're staying socially distant from people. So finance, the whole world of finance right now is wonky. Get your suspenders and your belt tightened. Things are going to get bumpy. They may be flat. They may be bumpy. Be prepared for both. And by bumpy, I mean what you were saying before. I wouldn't be surprised to see a big correction when the vaccine is released. At the point when people are thinking it's going to be really good, we may get a big run-up and then a drop. Because the reality is that we're not encapsulating the damage that's been done to the economy very well in the pricing in Wall Street. Value stuff is good, but I mean, it has taken that into account. But the part that's running the market up so high, it's not reasonable. It's not rational. It's, by definition, irrational exuberance. All right, so you want to wrap up for the hour?
Well, we didn't talk about the fact that the Treasury...
The contact information. We're not...
Oh, okay. Well, if you want to contact us off the air, we have a local telephone number where live people answer during the week, and we have a voicemail on weekends. And it's 254-947-1111.
You can reach that same voicemail toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, and you can do you can listen to our recordings of the radio program going back years. You can read our newsletter. You can sign up for our newsletter. You can contact us through the contact form there, or you can email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com.
And until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.